1927 was an exciting time in the United States. The stock market was booming, fueled by economic and industrial growth. Music and fashion were breaking all kinds of traditional boundaries. There was great optimism and feelings of confidence and security. Charles Lindbergh was a national hero after flying from New York to Paris, becoming the first person to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean. And in the movie theaters in 1927, The Jazz Singer debuted, with great excitement as the first talking motion picture. It was a good time to be alive. On Kimberly Avenue in Cleveland, Ohio, Mitchell and Sarah Siegel and their six children felt that same hope and optimism. Mitchell was a tailor and owned his own clothing store. Jerry, their youngest child, was like most other 13-year-olds of the day. He spent much of that summer riding his bike, listening to the radio, and cheering on his hometown Cleveland Indians baseball team, who were desperately trying to catch the New York Yankees in the American League pennant race. It was a carefree time. On June 2nd, everything changed for Jerry Siegel. On that evening, Mitchell was confronted in his clothing store by a robber. In the ensuing excitement, Mitchell suffered a massive heart attack and died. Suddenly, it didn't matter much to Jerry if the economy was strong. He didn't care that the movies had talking actors, and it wasn't all that important to him if the Indians caught the Yankees in the pennant race. Jerry just wished someone could have been there to save his dad. The following years were difficult. The Great Depression hit the United States. Nearly 25% of the country was out of work, and almost everyone else out of hope. Amidst this gloomy social and economic backdrop, Jerry started classes at Glenville High School in Cleveland. It was there he struck up a friendship with Joe Shuster. Their mutual love and interest of comic strips, science fiction, and movies made them inseparable. Jerry later described their friendship.
When Joe and I first met, it was like the right chemicals coming together.
The two of them were described as small, shy, nervous, and myopic lads, barely able to cope with ordinary bodybuilding contraptions. And at school, they were the puniest kids in the hallways. They were picked on and bullied by their larger, stronger classmates. Deep down inside, Jerry just desperately wished for someone who would stand up for him and them. Someone who could make things right. One night, while lying in his bed unable to sleep, Jerry's thoughts turned to heroes he had read about. Hercules, from Greek mythology, renowned for his incredible strength and courage in overcoming insurmountable challenges. Samson, the strong man from the Bible, powerful and dedicated. All those years of trauma Jerry had faced helped him create a place in his imagination where good would always overcome evil, a place where heroes would right every wrong. As thoughts flooded his mind, Jerry grabbed a pencil and a piece of paper. As he described it,
"I hop out of bed and write this down, and then I go back and think some more for about 2 hours and get up again and write that down."
Fighting through the emotional pain of his past, the loss, the disappointment, the bullying, he imagined a hero who would fight for truth, justice, and the American way. Jerry imagined a superhero. Although Jerry and Joe weren't an imposing twosome, they were the perfect team. Jerry was the great storyteller, Joe, the gifted illustrator. Jerry remembered that next morning.
"I dashed over to Joe's place and showed it to him. We just sat down and I worked straight through."
The world Jerry created with pencil and paper helped him deal with his pain and disappointment. His perfect world became a place where robbers were caught, bullets stopped, and bad guys punished. With their shared love for comics, the duo sat down to create their perfect world. And what a world they created. Jerry wrote, Joe sketched. And the story started in a faraway planet. Jor-El was a renowned scientist and member of the planet's council. He warned his people of impending disaster that would destroy their world. Jor-El and his wife Lara knew they couldn't be saved, but they placed their infant son, Kal-El, into a rocket ship and launched him towards Earth. Their final hope was that their son could become a beacon of hope in another world. The spacecraft, with its single passenger, landed in an obscure field in Kansas, just outside a town called Smallville. The infant was found and cared for by Jonathan and Martha Kent, a childless and humble couple who were more than willing to raise this child with their love and values. With this foundation, Jerry and Joe continued creating storylines and developing their utopian world of truth and justice. They also began their quest to find a publisher so they could share their story with the world. Their work, however, was not immediately appreciated by the comic strip world. For 6 years, they offered, shared, and presented their story. But eventually, they found a company who liked it. And on January 16, 1939, DC Comics published the comic strip in daily newspapers. And on that day, Jerry Siegel and George Schuster's superhero was finally introduced to the world. He was faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, champion of the oppressed, defender of truth, justice, and the American way. He was Superman. Through radio serials, comic books, television shows, movies, video games, and yes, even podcasts, Superman today continues to inspire each of us to use our own superpowers to help others who need it most. Just like he helped Jerry Siegel when he needed it most. Be super and pass it on from passiton.com. If you enjoyed this bite-sized podcast, subscribe and pass it on to a friend. Pass It On the podcast is available on your favorite platform.